Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
You are now listening to the Calcio Corner Podcast with your host, Raffaele.
Good. This is indeed the Calcio Corner Podcast, where we cover all corners of Italian football and more. My name is Raffaele. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this, the 35th episode of the Calcio Corner Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and Audioboom. You can follow my personal Twitter account. It is at Italiano Calcio. You can also follow the Twitter account for this podcast. It is at The Calcio Corner. So we will start off this 35th episode of the podcast by recapping the Serie A action from this past weekend. Round 19, halfway point of the season. Milan are the winter champions, despite losing in this round, but we'll get to all that in a little bit. As always, we will recap the action with the good, the bad, and the ugly. And let's start with the good. Roma getting a big win that not only might as well save their coach's job, which we'll talk about a little bit later on in the episode, but they certainly gained ground on Milan and Inter, who both dropped points this weekend. And after their 4-3 win over Spezia, Roma are now just 4 points behind Inter for second place and 6 points behind Milan. Not too bad if you ask me. Roma were able to win this game despite not having Edin Dzeko in the lineup and available. Morial got the start. He did a great job scoring twice in this game, scoring 2 of those 4 goals for Roma. I was pleased to see the fight from this Roma side and the bounce back, despite the, you know, the public bashing that they have taken from the Italian media, from the Twitter world, if you will, depending on how much they even paid attention to that. But, you know, considering the public bashing they've been taking, all the rumors that they've been hearing about with Fonseca perhaps getting fired and how, you know, had they lost this game, he would have lost his job. So the fact that the players battled hard despite allowing Spezia back into this game, they allowed Verde, the former Roma youth product, to score in the 90th minute. And at that point, it tied it to 3-3. And you're thinking, oh boy, here comes another bad dropping of points for Roma. And this, despite not losing the game, but perhaps this draw could cause Fonseca conceding in the final minutes. Those Roma players could have mailed it in, but again, they fought hard. They didn't settle for that 3-3 draw. They kept fighting. And it was the Roman-born player, it was the captain, Lorenzo Pellegrini, to score deep into stoppage time to get this big win for Roma. And as I mentioned, not just a big win, but a big win for many different reasons. Closing the gap in the Scudetto race, perhaps saving Fonseca's job. So great effort by Roma, especially when you consider, again, coming off that embarrassing performance against Lazio last weekend in the Derby della Capitale, their embarrassing loss to Spezia in the Coppa Italia midweek and the substitution errors and whatnot. So really good win for Roma. Hard-fought win against many elements, not just the opponent Spezia, who have proven to be a good side, a tricky side that doesn't necessarily back down to anybody. So they played a good opponent. They had a lot of outside elements to deal with, and they responded in this game. So good win for them, and they were super rewarded by gaining some ground on the two Milan-based clubs. Another big win this weekend, how about Atalanta? They absolutely trashed Milan 3-0. I know I wasn't expecting this when you consider how Atalanta have looked in their last two games coming into this one. They had drawn against Genoa and Udinese, and those, you know, in those two games combined, Atalanta only scored 1 goal. And, you know, we all know Atalanta to be this high scoring team and dynamic offensive team. And again, to only draw against Genoa and Udinese and score a combined 1 goal, you kind of were curious to see how they would perform against Milan. So that's why I was not expecting this 3-0 trashing. Am I totally shocked that they beat Milan? Not necessarily, but it's the way that in which they beat them. They really controlled this game and absolutely brought it to Milan. Ilicic had himself a game, played really well, and even though, you know, Milan had a few chances, particularly in the very early moments of the game, you just got the feeling that this wasn't going to be their day, and Atalanta certainly looked more like themselves in this one and the more deserving team, no doubt about it, to win this game. Now, Milan were without Alessio Romagnoli, and we know, you know, he's, you know, one of their leaders. He's the leader in their defense. He does a good job at keeping them organized in the back, so his absence was certainly felt, but I think Atalanta still would have won this game even if Romagnoli had played. Great 3 points for Atalanta as they continue to, you know, they they're hanging in there in that Scudetto conversation. They're in that race, certainly, and they're certainly right there in the top four. And it's a really condensed and tight table in Serie A. It's really shaping up to be a great race. And, you know, I think a few people were ready to write out Delanta off a few weeks ago, the whole Papu Gomez saga and everything. But big statement win, 3-0. Gasperini drawing up a masterful plan for his team, and his players executed it. Again, Ilicic was one of the standouts for me in this game, so good win for them. I'll certainly talk about the Milan perspective a little bit later. Verona, they also deserve a shout-out as being one of the goods from this weekend. They defeat Napoli 3-1, and their remarkable season continues. Their remarkable run against these top Italian teams this season continues. It was kind of a weird game. Lozano, he scored 9 seconds into the game for Napoli, and you kind of just wondered, were Verona going to be able to recover from this early, perhaps, knockout punch? But Verona did just that. They recovered. Federico Di Marco, who made the mistake that led to that Lozano goal, he was the one who scored to equalize for Verona and kind of redeem himself. So good for Di Marco as he continues his tremendous season. And I talked about it a few weeks ago. I do think he is a player that could crack Mancini's Euro squad this summer, especially if he continues this type of play. Verona ended up scoring 2 more in the second half. Mattia Zaccagni, he scored one of those goals. And, you know, if you believe the reports that he's going to be joining Napoli this summer, he scored, you know, the dagger that, you know, ended Napoli's hopes of any comeback in this game. Verona totally outplayed Napoli. Very deserving of this win, of these 3 points. This was just one of those masterclass games from Ivan Juric, and how could he not be the favorite for Coach of the Year at this point of the season? He's done a tremendous job with Verona. We know they don't have the most talent in Italy, but at the same time, they do have good talent. But Juric has done a great job. He tactically drew up a great game plan to really kind of puzzle Napoli. And again, other than that goal that Lozano scored 9 seconds in, which kind of came off an error by Federico Di Marco, Napoli really didn't get into any consistent play in this game. So we know Verona defensively are a really stout team and well-organized and make life difficult for the opposing team to, you know, crack that goal and get a goal. And they just did that. They totally frustrated Napoli. Verona now have 30 points. They're certainly in the mix for the Europa League. Sounds like they're going to get some more offensive reinforcements on their way with Kevin Lasagna set to join from Udinese. And, you know, by the time I record the next episode of this podcast, that move is expected to be official. And, you know, I'll get to the Napoli angle a little bit later on. Juventus, they beat Bologna 2-0. They didn't play a spectacular game by any means. But when you consider Milan, Inter, Napoli all dropping points, Juve getting the full 3 points certainly is a good weekend for the Bianconeri. Weston McKennie, he scored their second goal in this game. And as I've mentioned before, it's remarkable how quickly the American has become one of the most critical players for Juve. I don't know that I ever expected him to be this critical of a player at any point for Juve. And certainly, I never would have expected it to happen this soon. He's hands down their most important player in their midfield, a player that is contributing on the offensive end. He scored a couple goals. He's had some assists this season. He's such a critical player for this team. It's remarkable. It's great to see the Americans succeeding at Juve. I never expected it. So kudos to him. Lazio, they pulled out a 2-1 win over Sassuolo after falling behind early. Milinkovic-Savic, he had a thumping header off a corner to equalize for Lazio, but it was Ciro Immobile, who else, that ended up scoring what proved to be the game winner in the second half. 2 good wins in a row for Lazio. Obviously, they had beat their rivals Roma last weekend. Now a good win over a solid Sassuolo side. Lazio have won 4 in a row overall and are now just 2 points out of a Champions League spot. I talked about it leading up to their game against Roma last week. I felt that had they lost that game, they probably could have ended any of their hopes of fighting for a top four spot. Obviously, now they've beaten Roma. They beat Sassuolo. 2 good wins in a row against 2 good opponents, and they're right there in the mix. You know, Simone Inzaghi, he has his team well-positioned at this point at the halfway point of the season. They're ready to pounce. They're playing well, and they did this without Luis Alberto, who had the emergency appendectomy a few earlier in the week. So kudos to Lazio getting a good win over Sassuolo. Some more good. Davide Nicola, he earns a draw in his debut as Torino's coach. But more importantly, how about Simone Zaza? Scores both of Torino's goals in their 2-2 draw, their comeback draw against Benevento. Benevento were up 2-0 in this game. Torino kept battling. They really fought hard and definitely earned this point against Benevento. Zaza came into this game. He had just scored 1 goal in the league coming into this game. So scoring 2 in this one had to feel good for him. He's been linked to a few clubs this month and been rumored to leaving Torino, but perhaps maybe the club will end up holding down to him. And, you know, maybe Davide Nicola could get a little bit more out of the Italian striker. Another Torino player who played really well in this game was Wilfred Tsingo. He assisted one of the Zaza goals. And if you haven't been paying attention to Tsingo, he's really having a good season at Torino. And, you know, he's been flying under the radar because this team has been having a bad season. Tsingo, only 20 years old. He's really good as a wingback, as a wide midfield player. He loves to get forward and certainly can whip in the ball. He could also, you know, create some strikes from a distance. He's really a really good talent coming forward, and certainly a player that you should remember his name. We're going to be hearing a lot about this kid for a long time. So Wilfred Tsingo had a great game for Torino. Genoa, they continue their turnaround as they beat Cagliari 1-0. Genoa have lost just one game over their last six. Davide Ballardini, he's totally turned things around since taking over at Genoa. He has them heading in the right direction and starting to gain some separation from that relegation zone, something that really seemed in danger of happening right before he had been given the reins to retake over at Genoa. So kudos to him. Mattia Destro, he scored the goal. He continues to have a strong season. And ever since Ballardini took over, Destro has become Genoa's primary striker, replacing Scamacca. And he's certainly making the most out of it. He now has 8 goals. Mattia Perin also played outstanding in this game. He made some critical saves to deny Cagliari a goal and a chance to, you know, change the result of this game. All right, moving on to the bat from this past weekend. Now, I didn't quite know where to place Inter's draw against Udinese. I thought about mentioning it among the goods from this weekend because, you know, even though they did draw 0-0 against Udinese, a side they should have beat, they did pick up a point on Milan and now only trail them by 2 points for first place. But I ended up putting them among the bad things instead because they actually didn't really play that great of a game and they really did not deserve to win. It wasn't like Inter totally dominated Udinese and they were just unlucky to have not won. Udinese played solid. They held their own against Inter. There was a moment in the first half where one of the Udinese defenders, I don't remember who it was, he gifted the ball to Lautaro Martinez and he nearly scored. Now, he had Lukaku open in front of goal and perhaps could have made the pass. And it would have been a pass that Lukaku definitely would have finished because he would have been wide open. But Lautaro Martinez, he decided to shoot himself. And it made me think about Lautaro had a few good chances in that Juve game, right? This past weekend. And I know Inter still won that game and that's what's most important, but Lautaro has really gone cold in terms of scoring. He's had some really good looks, like I said, against Juve. He had this really good look against Udinese and he just can't find the back of the net. So that's certainly, you know, something that's worrisome for Inter fans. Lautaro has actually not scored in any of the last 4 league games. And when you also include their recent Coppa Italia game last week, it's now five games overall that he has not scored a goal. So I'm sure, again, Inter fans are hoping he can get back on track. Lukaku himself is also goalless over their last 4 league games. So, you know, it's no surprise that Inter has only won one of these 4 games. Since Lautaro and Lukaku have gone cold in goalless, they've only taken 5 out of a possible 12 points. So, yeah, I ultimately decided to put Inter amongst the bat from this week. And again, they should definitely handle Udinese, but it wasn't even like they really outplayed them by any means. Udinese held their own. Another bad, Stefano Pioli, he decided to experiment with one of Milan's new players, and he played Mete as a trequartista against Atalanta. Now at Torino, Mete traditionally played as a central midfielder. And now in time, could he grow into this player who could play as a trequartista? Sure, you know, perhaps he could. But this was not the right game by any means or the right opponent against a really good opponent like Atalanta to test him out in that role. You know, it's too significant of a game to roll the dice, in my opinion. Pioli knew he got this one wrong probably pretty quickly because he ended up subbing Mete off at halftime. He brought in Brahim Diaz, but at that point, it was already too late. Now, it seems, you know, like every decision Pioli has been making this season is the correct one, given how good and tremendous Milan have been this season. But playing Mete as the trequartista against a really good Atalanta side was definitely a wrong decision and a bad decision. And, you know, can we pinpoint that as the exact reason why Milan looked so bad and lost this game? No, I think this was more of Atalanta just playing really well. But playing Mete as the trequartista and experimenting with that in this game, the magnitude of this game, the magnitude of your opponent was definitely not the right move by Pioli. In my opinion, his first real significant mistake this season in charge of Milan. One more bad. I know I mentioned Cagliari losing to Genoa earlier in the Sardinia-based club. They've now been winless over their last 11 games, by far the worst in the league. I was asked on Twitter what's going on with this club and if DeFrancesco will last much longer. And I talked about it a few episodes ago. I thought DeFrancesco was going to get fired 2 weeks ago or so. So, yeah, I'm a bit surprised he still has his job. And then not only that, but today, as I'm recording this on Sunday, Cagliari announced that they have renewed DeFrancesco's contract until 2023. And I was totally shocked when I read that, when I saw that tweet come across, and you see it was an announcement from the club, and I saw DeFrancesco's name on, and I thought it was to announce that they were firing him. Because as I said, I've been expecting them to fire him for some time. But you know what? Then the more I thought about it, I kind of respect Cagliari's decision a bit. If the club believes in him, right, and I guess even though the team is struggling and underperforming, they still want to stick with their conviction of hiring him and trying to establish some stability. And, you know, by sticking with DeFrancesco, they're looking to do just that, right? They hired him. They believed in him over the summer. They felt he was the right man for the job. I know, you know, the results haven't been there, but they're trying to change the culture. They're trying to provide some stability there. And look, we don't see what goes on a day-to-day basis at the club. And, you know, clearly they must be happy with what DeFrancesco's doing, whether it's behind the scenes and training and how he handles these players and whatnot, because certainly the results on the field are not there to justify, one, just keeping his job, but two, to give him this contract extension. So clearly they like him. They're convinced of him. They have some conviction in their decision, which, again, I do respect. Perhaps they polled some of the players. They spoke to some of them, and, you know, these players might have expressed their support for DeFrancesco, so that could have helped as well. But yes, you know, bad for Cagliari pushing their winless streak to 11 games. This Cagliari team does have some talented players, and it should be doing a lot better than what they are doing. Similar to how I have felt about Udinese this season. And one decision I haven't been in love with that DeFrancesco has been doing is giving the preference to start Giovanni Simeone over Leonardo Pavoletti as a striker. Simeone, he scored 5 goals this season, but he really hasn't impressed me. I think he's just too inconsistent and wasteful in front of goal. I would rather see Pavoletti get more opportunities to start and try to provide some scoring help to go along with Gio Pedro. You know, he's been their only real consistent goal scorer this season, as he was last season. So I'd like to see Pavoletti get more starts over Simeone and see what he could do. You know, DeFrancesco, he's played around a bit with this lineup, trying many different formations and moving people around a bit and trying to figure out what is the best way and best formula. And, you know, that could certainly have some effect on this side, tinkering a bit with the lineup a bit too much. They are trying to turn things around. You know, they brought in N'Golan this month. They brought in Alfred Duncan from Fiorentina just the other week. So, you know, let's see. Maybe this new contract that DeFrancesco gets, you know, he gives him some confidence that the club still believes in him, takes a little pressure off of him, and he doesn't have to worry about losing his job. And, you know, if he has a more relaxed mind, that certainly could transfer to the players, and they could play with a little bit of more relief and not maybe play as tight that they feel like they're playing every moment. Every decision they make on the field could, you know, dictate the future of their coach's, you know, status at the club. So this team is certainly underperforming. It certainly puzzled me when I saw the contract extension, but then again, like I said, the more I thought about it, I don't really have a problem with it. It shows conviction in their decision, even hiring DeFrancesco in the first place. And again, maybe behind the scenes, they really like what they're getting from him at the club. So, you know, long term, we'll see what happens over time. All right, moving on to the ugly from this past weekend. My ugly is Napoli, and I didn't think I'd ever talk about Napoli as being one of the worst parts of around in Serie A, but I believe they are worthy of being here. Now, if you've been a consistent listener to my podcast, you know that I say time after time, we never know which Napoli side is going to show up. Are we going to get the dominant version like we saw against Fiorentina last weekend, or the inconsistent, sloppy, head-scratching version we've seen too often this season? Against Verona, we got the inconsistent, sloppy, head-scratching version. As I mentioned earlier, Lozano scores 9 seconds into the game. They had a few other good chances early on, so you're thinking Napoli is going to handle this Verona game, handle this Verona side in this game. We're maybe going to get this dominant version like we saw against Fiorentina, but that wasn't the case. Besides those opening few minutes, Verona controlled this game. They really took it to Napoli, and as I said, they deserve this win. They deserve the 3 points. You wonder, was there some hangover from Napoli losing the Italian Super Cup on Wednesday against Juventus? They didn't look good in that game. They didn't look good in this game. Lorenzo Insigne, he got subbed off against Verona in the 60th minute, and he really had a poor game. He was, you know, non-existent for Napoli in the Super Cup, and he had that missed penalty, so you wonder if that was, you know, still weighing on his mind coming into this game. He was also really non-existent in this game. We know how critical of a player Insigne is for this side, and no surprise that, you know, these two losses against Juve and Verona, Insigne hasn't performed well, so he certainly dictates a lot, and Napoli needs to get Insigne on track, which will help them get on track. I don't talk about it a lot because I try to be as objective as possible, but I am a Napoli fan, and as a Napoli fan, I'm no longer considering this team among the Scudetto contenders. I'm done being fooled and, you know, tricked to believe that they are one. When you see the performance they put in against Fiorentina, 6-0 win, they played flawless. They absolutely drummed Fiorentina's heads in. You know, and they play these dominant games against some other opponents this season. How could you not fall in love with the side, right? How could you not consider them amongst the Scudetto contenders? But they're way too inconsistent to be considered among them, in my opinion, at this point. They just are. If you want to win the Scudetto, especially this season, with so many good teams, so many competitive and viable teams that could win it, you have to be more consistent, and you cannot be as consistent as we've seen from Napoli this season. Gattuso, he has to figure this out. He has to get this team to stop having these lows, because, you know, the only way this season has really gone for Napoli is when they're really good, they're really good. But when they are bad, they are really bad. There's no middle ground with this team, and that's really a problem. I also, you know, think that Napoli need to finish in the top four. They need to get back into the Champions League, and you don't want to miss out two seasons in a row. And when you consider, you know, just how far this club has really came over the past, you know, 15 plus years, ever since De Laurentiis has, you know, resurrected them from bankruptcy and playing in Serie C, you don't want to start taking these steps back and, you know, missing out on the Champions League season after season. So, you know, that to me is more important at this point than focusing on whether or not you are Scudetto contenders. Napoli have to make it their mission to finish in the top four. If Napoli could play more consistent, you know, play more consistently and really go on a good run, perhaps I will reconsider them as Scudetto contenders, depending on how the rest of the table looks. But right now, way too inconsistent to be considered one of the Scudetto contenders. I'm done being fooled by this side. You know, you can't point to injuries and, you know, COVID cases as the reason for this inconsistency. Yes, they've been without Koulibaly. They've been without Diego Demme. They've been without Dries Mertens. They've been without Victor Osimhen for an extended period of time. But so many other clubs have missed key players at various points this season. Juve have been without Dybala. Juve have been without Cuadrado. They've been without Alexandre. They've been without Cristiano Ronaldo. Chiellini's missed time. Milan have been without Rebic. They've been without Zlatan. Romagnoli's missed some games. So all these big clubs have missed significant players at some point this season. So there's no excuses. I'm not willing to bail Napoli out with any excuses and to try to justify why they've been so inconsistent. This is an issue that, you know, whether it's Gattuso has to figure out, these players have to look at themselves. The lows can't be as low as they are when you compare that to how high those highs are. There has to be some consistent ground and consistent play from this Napoli side. I guess if you want to take some positive out of this game from a Napoli standpoint, Victor Osimhen, he did return. He came on in the second half, and this was just his first appearance for Napoli since November 8th. So perhaps, you know, could Osimhen be that person that helps to jumpstart things and get Napoli back on track? Because we know when he was playing early this season, prior to his injury, prior to his battle with COVID, they did look really well. So, you know, we will see what he could bring to the side, and perhaps could he be that answer? We will, you know, find out. All right, now on to buy or sell it to cover some of the storylines and rumors that have been dominating the Italian media and the world of football. Number one, buy or sell it, Max Allegri is the best option to take over as Roma's coach. I will buy this one. So we know that there's been, you know, a lot of talk lately in the Italian media about Paolo Fonseca perhaps not lasting the season at Roma. It all kind of started after, you know, their embarrassing display and loss against Lazio in the Derby della Capitale. Then they obviously crashed out in the Coppa Italia in an embarrassing way. And, you know, losing to Spezia, look, Spezia have proven to be a bit of a tricky team this season. So perhaps, you know, should have you won that game, of course, but it wasn't so much losing to them. It was kind of in the embarrassing way that they did. They had the issue with substituting on six players, and some players were trying to, you know, tell them that they were putting on too many players and whatnot. So that whole debacle certainly didn't look good for Roma. It kind of was an embarrassing moment for them. You know, they barely beat Spezia in this round, as I talked about a little earlier, but they did get a win. It saves Fonseca's job for the time being. But I would also ask you this, where should Roma be at this point after 19 rounds? Halfway through the season, how much better would you like this Roma team to be? They're in third place in Serie A. So again, how much higher would you like to see them? Let's not forget they have not had Nicolò Zaniolo this entire season, arguably, you know, their most talented, most dynamic player. Some people think that this side has overachieved a bit, that they are in third place. And perhaps that could be a bit of the case, right? Maybe they are overachieving a bit being in third. But if we believe that they are overachieving, doesn't Paolo Fonseca deserve some credit for that? You know, isn't that a sign of perhaps the coach getting the most out of his players and squeezing every ounce of talent out of them? So I do think he deserves some credit. So I think Fonseca deserves to keep his job, and certainly beating Spezia this weekend sounds like it'll help extend his time at Roma. But again, they're only 6 points out of the Scudetto. Whether or not you believe that they would actually contend and be legitimate contenders is one thing, but halfway through the season, they're in third place, only 6 points behind Milan for the first place in the Scudetto lead. But back to the main point of this buy it or sell it, I do think Allegri, should the Freikins decide to make a change, whether it's now, whether it's, you know, soon in the near future or at the end of the season, among the available coaches, I do think Allegri is the best option to take over at Roma. All indications point to the fact that Allegri would rather take over at a club during the summer rather than mid-season. That's kind of been his MO over the past few seasons since he left Juventus, that he's been linked to various jobs and whatnot in Italy, abroad and whatnot, but it's been kind of a mainstay that he would rather take over during the summer. So that perhaps could be a hiccup if Roma were to look to make a change mid-season. What Allegri would bring to Roma, why I think he would be their best option, obviously he brings plenty of experience, coaching experience, but also the winning pedigree. Let's not forget that he didn't just win at Juve. Obviously, he won plenty of titles, guiding the Bianconeri, but he also won with Milan, right? He won a Scudetto with Milan, the final team to have won a Scudetto since Juventus have gone on this historic run. So he's proven that he could win at multiple clubs. Coaching Juve does not guarantee that you're going to win titles. Even though they've experienced this period of dominance, you know, it doesn't mean that they were automatically going to win. I know the league has caught up over the past few seasons, so they have faced more competitive competition in the league. But what he was still doing at Juventus was remarkable, and he deserves a lot of credit for that and those titles he won. Obviously, he also guided Juve to two Champions League finals, and since he's left, they haven't come close to reaching that far in the Champions League. So he deserves a lot of credit there. So I know there's some people that have mixed feelings about Allegri, but I always viewed him as a pretty good coach, an excellent coach. In addition to that winning pedigree that he's going to bring with him should Roma hire him, he also would provide some stability. And I'm not saying things are, you know, crazy at Roma by any means, and they're this disorganized and dysfunctional club and organization, but I do think he could come in, he could kind of tighten things up a little bit, get this club a little bit more in line. And again, I think he will run this team and do a great job with this club. As I mentioned, his preference is to take over during the summer. And, you know, if Freikin wanted to make this change immediately, he may have to look elsewhere, or he could obviously try to convince Allegri to take over. Maurizio Sarri and Walter Mazzarri, those are two other coaches that have been linked to the Giallorossi. And no disrespect to either of them, I'm a big fan of Mazzarri. He did a great job. We know what he did with Napoli, you know, earlier in his coaching tenure. I think Maurizio Sarri gets an unfair level of blame, but I think he did a great job at Napoli. There's no denying that. I know he didn't, you know, win a Scudetto, which was obviously the hopes of the Napoli fans, but he did a great job at Napoli. Juventus last season, he did win the Scudetto during a crazy pandemic ravaged season. He did a good job at Chelsea. I think he's been, you know, kind of unfairly labeled as a scapegoat by some of these former clubs he's been at. But at the end, Mazzarri and Sarri, they're not Allegri. I think Allegri is the best option for some of those reasons I laid out. If a change comes mid-season and they can't convince Allegri to come in now, I think Mazzarri would be a good option to take over for the rest of the season if he's willing to sign on as probably a temporary coach, barring he works some sort of miracle and, you know, wins the Scudetto or something, and then Roma kind of are maybe forced to keep Mazzarri. But barring anything like that, I think you should just stick with Fonseca if I'm the Freikin group. Again, they're in third place halfway through the season, 6 points off the Scudetto race. I don't know how much better of a position you could ask for if you're a Roma fan, so I don't think he deserves to be fired. And I think the only reason you fire him at this point is if you feel that he's kind of lost those players and they're not responding to him anymore, so then perhaps you feel you need to make a change. But given the way they kept fighting against Spezia this weekend, and despite allowing Spezia to equalize, as I mentioned earlier, in the 90th minute, they still fought hard, and Pellegrini got that game-winning goal, so I don't think he's lost that locker room. So I stick with Fonseca till the end of the season. But yes, in terms of who would be the best option to take over at Roma, I do think it is Allegri. All right, number two, staying with Roma, bringing back El Shaarawy is a good move for the Giallorossi. I'm going to buy this one as well. I like this move for Roma. He's obviously familiar with the club. He's familiar with the city, the expectations, and all that comes with wearing that Giallorossi shirt. Roma definitely can use some more depth up front in their attack, and that's what El Shaarawy will provide. whether, you know, he's a starter and bump someone else to the bench and provide depth in that way, or he's a player that primarily comes off the bench. We'll see what Fonseca ultimately decides to do with his lineup. But I do think it's a good signing. We've kind of seen Mkhitaryan. He's cooled off a bit. He was off to a great start this season, but his play has kind of, you know, come back down to earth a bit lately, and perhaps that could be fatigue on his part. We know these teams are playing a condensed schedule, and since he's kind of cooled off, Roma have also had some slip-ups, so bringing in El-Sharari could provide Mkhitaryan some rest, and it could just benefit, again, providing depth up front for Paulo Fonseca to deploy in his lineup. It could kind of help re-energize this attack, and this also shows that the Friedkins, obviously we know they're willing to spend money, invest money to try to get the best out of this club and help ensure that they do achieve, whether it's Champions League qualification or, again, as I just mentioned, how serious of Scudetto contenders you think they are, given them being 6 points out. The Friedkins are definitely all in with this club. It's being reported that El-Sharari will cost Roma about 20 million euros, so certainly a significant amount of money by the Friedkins to invest to help ensure that they do get a top four spot. El-Sharari, as I mentioned previously, played for Roma 139 games with them, scoring 40 goals while wearing that Giallorossi shirt. Also, for El-Sharari, in terms of the national team, I know he's been getting call-ups to the national team from Mancini, despite having been playing in China. So I don't know how much of El-Sharari Mancini has actually been watching and just perhaps given him these call-ups. But returning to Italy certainly allows Mancini to better scout him ahead of the Euros this summer. So also from a national team standpoint, this is definitely a good move for El-Sharari coming back to Italy. All right, final one, number three. Bernardeschi is a bust at Juventus. I'm going to sell this one. I don't think Bernardeschi is a bust. He's never really been given that those consistent starter time or playing time since he's joined Juve back in 2017. So, you know, I guess you could look at that, the fact that he hasn't been able to consistently crack that starting lineup, perhaps as a sign that he hasn't been able to prove himself, whether it's at training or the opportunity he is given in the game. But I'm not necessarily looking at it that way. I think, you know, it's a case of there's better options at Juve to play ahead of him. And I don't want, you know, anyone to think I'm taking anything away from him, but I never really thought or viewed him as this unreal special talent when he was at Fiorentina. So I never had these lofty expectations for him when he joined Juve, as perhaps some did. I know he cost a lot of money, and with that expensive price tag, fans certainly expect big things and perhaps demand big things, and that's something that perhaps Bernardeschi is dealing with, that the ill fate, if you will, of the hefty price tag. And I don't want people to think I think he's this bad player. I do think he's a solid player. I just never really thought of or viewed him as this great player like others did. His best season in terms of goal scoring was, you know, the final one he spent in Florence when he scored 11 goals. And, you know, that season has kind of proven to be more of an anomaly rather than the norm, because he's come nowhere near that goal scoring total since he joined Juve or even in his previous seasons in at Fiorentina. And I'm sure it's, you know, it's not easy for him or any player to try to get into a rhythm when you're given this sporadic playing time that he's been receiving at Juve, especially this season. And when you consider, you know, Pirlo has options like Chiesa to play ahead of him, Juan Cuadrado, Kulusevski. These are all options that he clearly prefers over Bernardeschi, and I don't think you could blame him. So it's hard for him to crack that starting lineup and get himself into a rhythm. I do think he's a good player. I think he's, you know, what he's being used for as someone who could come on in the second half, give you a solid 20, 30 minutes, depending on how early Pirlo brings him on, and give you a solid performance, try to take advantage of a tired defense, whether you have the lead and you just need someone on the offensive end to hold the ball and just kind of keep working a tired defense. I think he's could do a good job at serving that role. We haven't seen it that often at Juve, and I think that's why some Juve fans are certainly frustrated with Bernardeschi. But again, from my perspective, given how I viewed him when he joined Juve, I don't think he's a bust. I think maybe the word disappointment would be a more fair word to call him or attribute to him. If you were someone who certainly had these, you know, these lofty expectations and thinking that he was going to be this world-class talent when the Bianconeri signed him, then yeah, I fully understand why you would call him a bust, but I never had those expectations, so I don't necessarily consider him a bust. I would say more of a disappointment so far. So that will do it for the 35th episode of the Calcio Corner podcast. I hope you have enjoyed it. Once again, please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and Audioboom. Feel free to leave a rating and comment. That would be greatly appreciated to help us grow our content. And until next time, guys, ciao.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Calcio Corner podcast with your host, Raffaele. If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save.